On page 560, we started Perek Hey. I know, I heard already. Somebody was reminded, because I forgot all about it.
The homework?
Yeah. It's very good. Okay, the last... But we're in the middle of learning now, and we're going to discuss the thing that we said last week, we'll discuss now, if people remind me, which they did. And that is that if somebody does certain avedis, certain sins that the Torah is going to enumerate, so then the punishment, the korban is, if you were rich, you bring one korban. If you're not so rich, you bring a second type of a korban. If you're poor, you bring a third type of korban. Okay? But it's called, as we said, Ashim Karban Eilev Yerid. That's what it's called, a korban that goes up and down based on the wealth of a person. Now, last time we started discussing that what's the first case in the laws of witnesses, the laws of testimony. And we said that if somebody heard testimony and refused to sell it, to say it, and because of that, somebody ended up losing money because of it, so therefore you have to bring a korban. Okay, that's basically where we're up to now, then. So then we also discussed another concept that we said, well, what's a vital part when you bring a korban is that you must have confession. Okay? Now, confession is really the mitzvah, part of the mitzvah of tshuva. Tshuva, the Rambam writes, and this is the purpose why a person brings a korban, is either to stimulate the tshuva, or like we learned, post-tshuva, like when you make get into a fight with somebody, and you make up, and you ask for forgiveness, but the relationship is still not what it used to be, so therefore by sending a gift, you can recreate the original friendship officially that was there. That was the concept of a korban. There's just one interesting point before we get into vidui, that, in fact, there's the ground clemish.
Here you go. This one.
Oh yeah. Wait a second. The Rebbe brings down a very interesting thing over here about if you did a sin, and then you realize you did the sin, and you designated a korban, and then you sinned again before you brought the korban. Can that one korban kill two sins with one stone? In other words, if you sinned, and then you forgot, and then you designated a korban, and then you realize that you'd sinned again, can it be used for the same korban or not? Okay, so he brings down over here an interesting thing. The Rambam writes, here, if a person set aside a korban for forbidden fat that he ate, okay, he can't use it for the same korban that he did, he desecrated Shabbos. Because two different korbanos. What happens though, if the person, for the same sin, okay, what happens for the fat he ate yesterday, and then again he ate fat today, he should not bring the same korban. What happens though if he did? It's accepted for both.
What?
If a guy ate fats and he needs to bring a korban, and then he desecrated Shabbos, but he didn't bring the korban yet, you need to bring two korbanos. Mm-hmm. Even if you only brought one, it's not good. What happens if he ate fat, designated a korban, before he brought it, he ate fats again, so technically he has to have two korbanos. What happens if he only brought one? So the Rambam says it's valid. Okay? Now, one second. Now, the question over here is like this. When you're dealing with atonement, kapara for a sin, and this is going to lead into this whole concept of what vidui is. If a person does kapara for a sin, is it basically for the future, or is it primarily for the past?
In the future.
If a person says, you know, a guy is very wealthy. He says, you know what, I like to sin. And I'll bring a korban every day. Yeah? I'll do a sin, bring a korban, and then when he brings a korban, he says, I know I'm going to do it again. So then it's not a kapara. It's not forgiveness. There's two parts of tshuva. Tshuva is charat ala avar, regret for the past, and kabbalah ala haba, and acceptance for the future, then you're not going to do it again. Even though we all know we're going to do it again anyway, but at least at the time, like on Yom Kippur, when we say it, we mean that we're not going to do it again. So he says there's two essence over here. One aspect of the korban is to forgive the past, and one concept is to forgive the future. So he says like this, this is the difference between this din. Because if the korban, if the Rambam writes, but the evidence, if you brought the korban, it's accepted, if you did it for this, you know, two avedas, that shows, the Rambam rules that the sin offering is for the future. Because both times, he's basically saying, in the future, I'm not going to do it again. That both sins are really one. Because for the future, what's he making up his mind? I'm not going to do this sin again. So it doesn't matter that he did two sins in the past. See, if you look at only the past, he did two sins, you need two sacrifices. But if the main concept of a korban is to resolve for the future, that you're not going to be sinning in the future, so then one korban would be enough. Because what it's one resolve. I'm not going to eat fats anymore. I'm not going to eat treif anymore.
That's only if both are the same aveda.
If both are only if they're the same aveda, correct. Now, that last time, as I was reminded, and this is all part of this vidui stuff, by the way. Why is it so important when a person brings a carbon, like the Torah says many times, it's vados chatosim. They have to confess the sins. We know the whole concept of Yom Kippur is vidui. Every day. We say Hashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, okay, which is basically vidui, confessing sins. And as we learned, that when you say the Al-Chetz, if you look at the Al-Chetz in Yom Kippur, each one is a double olive base. Okay, Al-Chetz Shechatan V'nachal Ba'ein Nesu Beratzen, Al-Chetz Shechatan B'im Atzalev, Al-Chetz Shechatan V'nachal, you know, there's two olives and two bases and two gimnals. If you look at Hashamnu, Bagadnu, it's the olive base. Hashamnu is olive, Bagadnu is base, Gazalnu, Dibarnu, Daifavinu. So it says in even the Mefarshim of Siddur, that when you say Hashamnu, it means all sins with Aleph. Bagadnu is all sins with Beis. Gazalnu includes all sins with Gimels. When you say Al-Chet, you say Al-Chet with the Aleph letter, it includes all the Aleph Avedas, Beis Avedas. So you see that, as the Torah many times says, V'izvados Chatosam. They have to confess the sins. Why is Vidui, why is confession, verbal confession, by the way, in other words, the Torah says v'izvadu es chatosam, confession, even on Yom Kippur, you can't say al-chet in your mind. You need to verbally articulate, say al-chet shechatanu ufanacha. You can't think ashamnu bagadnu. You have to say ashamnu bagadnu gazalnu. Now, why is it that important that a person says it vidui? Why is vidui so important? So it's explained, the Machzedek explains a very interesting concept of sin. David HaMelech says in Tillim, V'chatasi negdi samid. My sin is always opposite me. Which implies is like there's an entity of a sin, and it's opposite me, and it's always there. So it says like this, when a person does an aveda, there's two parts of a sin. There's the action of the sin, and there's the enjoyment of the sin. Right? If you don't enjoy treif, you're not going to eat it. Unless if you're doing it to spite, and that's also an enjoyment. People that are spiteful enjoy being spiteful. So let's say a person does an aveda, let's say, of eating non-kosher food. So there's two parts of the sin. There's the eating of the meat, of the treif of food. And then there's also the enjoyment that you get by doing the sin. Okay? Or lashon hara. The verbal lashon hara is the action of the sin. And the enjoyment that you get, because, you know, speaking lashon hara is enjoyable, because there's nobody to listen. You're not going to talk lashon hara to the walls. It's not enjoyable. Right? It's only enjoyable if there's somebody listening. So lashon hara is enjoyable. Or else you wouldn't do it. There's no mitzvah, there's no reason why somebody wants to speak lashon hara if there's no enjoyment out of it. Okay. So 1 second. So therefore, it says in Kabbalah and Chassidus, that when a person does the two parts of an aveda, they actually create an entity of a sin that has a body and a soul, and a sham and a guf. The action that you do creates the body of the sin, the goof of the sin, and the enjoyment that you do by sinning creates the soul and the neshama of the sin. That's why David HaMelech says, Chatasi Negdi Samit, there's an entity of a sin. It's not obviously a physical thing, but there's actually an entity of a sin that has a body and a soul within it that exists, that we create. Therefore, what's the concept of tshuva? The concept of tshuva is to undo and to get rid of that avera that you did. Therefore, you have to kill the soul of the sin, and you need to kill the body of the sin. So that's why there's two parts of tshuva. There's, as the Rambam writes, mitzvahs are very interesting. The Rambam writes, mitzvahs are tshuva, is a zivas achet, regretting the sin. In addition to that, which is not actually, it's a machlokes, if it's actually part of the mitzvah of tshuva, is vidui dvarim. And the Rambam also writes, by tshuva, it's a mitzvah, lehizvadeis, to confess the sins that you did. What happens over here? When you regret the sin that you do, that removes the enjoyment of the sin. Because you feel bad that you did the sin. That is the tshuva to get rid of the soul of the sin. How do you get rid of the body of the sin? So the Gemara says, the truth is, when do you know somebody does complete tshuva? So the Gemara says, for instance, if it's adultery, the Gemara says, if you're in the same place with the same woman and the same power and the same, and you don't sin, that's the tshuva. Or, like the Rambam writes, in the Prakim of Raman, the Rambam writes, a Rosh is now to be an aid, witness. How does a witness, when do you know he does tshuva? So it says, if he stole money, he goes to a city where nobody knows him and he gives out money, or he does things like that. Okay, or a guy that was selling tray for meat goes to a new place and opens up a place and, there's definitely no selling of tray for meat. But that level of tshuva is very difficult. They have the same place, the same thing, it's not practical. So Hashem, in His infinite kindness, made a rule in the Gemara called Akimas Svasav Havamaisim. Verbal articulation is an action. So therefore it says that when a person confesses the sin, that action kills the body of the sin. The regret of the sin kills the neshama of the sin, and the verbal articulation of vidui, verbally, physically confessing the sin in Hashem's kindness, kills the body of the sin, and therefore now you did a proper tshuva, that the sin is not there anymore. So vidui, it's not stam the concept of vidui to confess that I did the sin, because according to Halacha, even though Hashem knows if we're sorry or not, but you still need an halacha, a verbal confession. Not public. In the Beis HaMikdash, on the carbon, whatever it is. But you need to have a physical, verbal confession, because that kills the body of the sin. And therefore, it's an integral part of tshuva, because the whole concept of tshuva is to destroy what you created. So you need the vidui. But
you also between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, if somebody stole money from someone, you have to actually go and give the money back. You can't just go.
Not only between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, a whole year.
No, but I'm saying, Yeah, I mean, you can't just say you're sorry and confess. You have to make restitution.
If you're able to.
Oh, okay.
But this is even sins between man to Hashem. You're right. Even a verse between man to man, confessing your sin to Hashem won't help unless if the person forgives you. We're talking here Avedis Bein Adam Lamakim, between man and Hashem.
Right.
So over there you taka need the concept of a verbal confession to destroy the sin.
Right.
Now obviously Hashem is not going to forgive a person if he wronged another person, whether verbally abuse, financial abuse, whatever, cheating, lie, whatever it may be. Yeah, but that's a separate story. But
the idea of enjoying the sin, what two things. One, if a person doesn't know they really sinned, they thought something was kosher and they didn't know.
But they still enjoyed it.
but they didn't enjoy the sinning. They sinned.
I didn't say they enjoyed the sin. The fact is they ate something not kosher that they enjoyed.
Okay, and then the other thing is, what if someone sins and they did it because they thought they needed to do it? Not that they didn't do it because they enjoyed it. They did it because they felt
needing,
it was the right thing to do.
Needing is enjoyment. Filling a need is called enjoyment. That's what it is, the bottom line. It fills your need. That's enjoyment, that your need was filled. Okay.
But how do you make the
tshuva to me? That? Say? Asham no, not saying it, meaning it.
Yeah.
No, today, apidin, tshuva, has to have, we don't have a carbon today. Okay? I'll give you an example. It says, Karbanis, in Hebrew it's called, they're not ma'akiv, certain actions. For instance, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if somebody wanted to become a ger, a convert to Yiddishkeit, there were three things that had to be done. They had to have, if it was a male, mila, tvila, and karbon. If you look in halacha, the Torah says clearly. I mean, the Gemara says, halacha says, if you want to convert, you need to bris if it's a man, go into the mikveh and bring a carbon. So the Rambam says, nowadays that we don't have Beis HaMikdash, the person's 100% Jewish, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, all the Gerim are going to have to bring a carbon for Gerus, because that's the third process. But it doesn't mean you're not Jewish until then. Understand? It's still, you're still Jewish. Now, Mashiach comes, there's going to be long lines around the world of all the sinners. You better take a number now, because the line will be very long, of everybody bringing a carbon. But the fact that now there's no carbon because Hashem doesn't let us bring a carbon, tshuva is aziv esachet, regret, and confession. And to mean it.
But there is some avirot, you know, it's not, there is karet, you know, the Rambam said, you know, it's,
yeah, but kares you could do tshuva, and then you don't get kares.
But the Rambam said you cannot do tshuva on those.
She could.
Avar
akris is a gemara in Yuma. Tanya b'seif Yuma. No, the geres tshuva begins. Shleish chulukik kaparem tshuvim kolachad. Avar al mitzvah sesev v'shav ein zavz mishamat shemeichem li. Avar alay sasev v'shav tshuva tel v'yem kipurim mechaper. Avar akris is a mitzvah bezdin. Tshuva v'yeh makipurim teilim and the punishment sisurim emarkin, punishment cleanses. But you could do tshuva even on a veir of kares. In fact, if a person did tshuva, then they don't need to get kares. Hashem forgives the kares if they did proper tshuva. Okay, let's go back. What?
The idea of bringing a carbon and all that, is this tied to the idea of not being a vegetarian? Like the idea that
You don't have to be a vegetarian.
No, but is it the idea that animals are meant to be killed?
Animals are meant to be elevated by people using them. Not people to be elevated by animals using them. Like some people
the
in the world.
Hold, you can absolve all sins.
In the world. Okay. That's the meal. The tefillah is Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. Tefillah and Kabbalah HaMitzvahs go together. Okay. Pasuk Beis Perekei. 560 all the way at the bottom. The last few words. Or Nefesh. Okay, the first thing we learned last week, remember, he swore falsely because whatever. Or, that's one person that brings a carbon elevated. Then there's another person. Or a person that touched something which was tamei, impure. Or the dead carcass of an animal. Or the carcass of a dead animal. Or in the dead carcass of a bug. So all these things are tamei. You make you tamei. And a person was concealed from him, meaning he forgot about it, v'tamei v'ashem, and he was impure, and he sinned. Meaning, it's not the pshat.
Double sin?
No, it's not the pshat that he forgot he was tamei, and that's it. He forgot he was tamei, so what sin did he do? So the Gemara learned out, what did he do? He went into the Beis HaMikdash when he was tamei. You know, the Torah doesn't say that clearly. Okay, that he went into the Beis Hamikdash. But the fact that the Pasuk says, well, who Tommy, he was Tommy Va'ashim and he sinned. What sin? There's no sin not to become Tommy. Even a Kohen is only not allowed to become Tommy to a dead human body. But a Kohen could touch a dead carcass of an animal, even at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara explains, when the Torah says he was Tommy and he sinned, doesn't mean the sin was that fact that he became Tommy. That's not a sin. The sin was that he forgot that he was Tommy, and he went into the Beis Hamikdash, or he ate karbanis that a person who is Tommy is not allowed to eat. Or, another example, ki yiga betumas adam, he touched in the tumah of a person. Now, it doesn't mean over here a dead body. What it means is, there are certain people that are tummy, like zav, nida, zava, there's certain male or female impurities, bodily impurities, that if a person touches that these people, they become tummy. And again, they forgot that they became tummy, and they went into the Beis Hamikdash, the yad of Hashem, and then he realized and he became sin. What was the sin again? He went into the Beis Hamikdash. Pasik dalit, or nefesh, another type of a sin. This is all for the carbon oil of a yerid. Or nefesh, akisi shava, or swore, levati bisfasayim, expressing with their lips, lahara o lahetiv, to do bad or to do good. Now, here clearly the Torah says, a vow is only effective if it's levati bisfasayim, if he verbally said it. If a person makes a vow in thought, they say to themselves, I swear this and this and this, it's not a shvur. The only time an oath is an oath, the Torah says, is levati bisfasayim, if you said it with your mouth. What was it? Lahara alahetiv, either for bad or for good. Now what's bad? He makes an oath, he's not going to eat. Whether he's not going to eat at all, or he's not going to eat certain foods, lehetiv, or he swore that he will eat. Okay, and what happened? Venela mimenu, he forgot that he made the vow. Voyadava Hashem la'achas me'ela, and he realized and he sinned. Okay, now, Now this is only when the Torah says ha'adam b'shvua, like it says chal sheivati ha'adam b'shvua. Means that it has to be a person, number one, who is an adult. Because if it's a kid, they don't have a din of shvua. The only time halacha says, the only time halacha says a child can make a vow is after the age of 12 for a boy and 11 for a girl. A year before Bar Bas Mitzvah, it says, you check them out. If they understood what they said, the vow is valid. If they don't, they're still immature, they don't know what they said, then the vow is not valid. But a kid under 10, under 11 for a girl, or under 12 for a boy, if they make a vow, the soldan doesn't apply.
What about an adult who acts like
a kid? 90% of the population.
They bechlau should be destroyed. No, what?
Yeah, the concept of... the concept...
No?
The concept of a promise not being valid unless you speak it. I have a question about that. Isn't there a halacha that if you have in mind to get something for somebody, a gift for example, and you, in your mind, you're buying it for that person, once you purchase it, you can't change your mind, it already belongs to them?
No, it doesn't.
I remember learning this in Shiva,
no?
No.
No? Would you say, Magbiya Mitzila Chaveda Kana Chaveda, that's a whole different din. If you bought it for them...
That's what I mean.
No. If they say to you, do me a favor, you're going to the store, buy this for me.
Oh, okay.
And you bought it for them, then you can't take it for yourself. But if I buy something and I have in mind I'm going to give them a gift, I'm not mechuyif to give them the gift.
Okay, so that's what okay.
There is a concept in halacha, the Gemara discusses it, that's called David Emes Bulvavai. Speaking truth in your heart. So the Gemara learns out that it's proper, we discussed this in one of the Gemara shares. It's proper that if you, especially by tzedakah it says, even though the only time you're obligated to give tzedakah is if you verbally say, promise X amount of money to tzedakah, But it says also, based on the pasuk of David Emes Bovavi, speaking truth in the heart means that according to Allah, even if you thought to do it, you really should do it anyway. Especially by tzedakah. But the Gemara tells a story. There was a guy davening, and it was the middle of davening, and a guy came over to him and offered a price for a merchandise. But the guy couldn't talk because it was the middle of davening. So he ignored the guy. So the guy thought it wasn't enough money. So he hiked up the price. The guy offered him more money than he first offered. And again, the guy was davening anyway. So when he finished davening, he went over to the guy and he said to him, the first price you offered is what you're going to get it at. Why? He said, because when you offered me that price, granted I was in the middle of davening, but when you offered me that price, in my heart I accepted it. Now, in halacha, no, the Gemara says about this, David Emes Bulvavi spoke truth in his heart. According to halacha, he definitely could have taken the higher price. Because he never agreed to the first price and changed his mind. He never told the guy anything.
But there's one problem there.
What?
Well, if he heard what the guy said for the first price, he wasn't davening with enough kavanah.
That's the side. It has nothing to do with... There's a din in Gemara in Shulchan Aruch. If you know, on Shabbos you're not allowed to do business. Okay? If I sell you something on Shabbos...
Really?
I said that's what it says. You just closed down the whole...
This Shabbos direct.
Now, what happens though, if I did sell you something on Shabbos, I went ahead, I sold it to you for Shabbos, you gave for $100, you gave me the $100, I took the $100, we did the sale on Shabbos. Afterwards, I wanted back out of the deal, so he said, no, Shabbos, you're not allowed to do selling. You know what? Shabbos ahin, Shabbos ahead. Money is money. The din is, the deal stays a deal. Maybe you weren't allowed to do it on Shabbos, but the deal's a deal. That's the halacha. The deal stays a deal.
Do the money.
Huh?
The only reason it's forbidden is you're not come to
write. So what? Does that, even if you wrote, what's the difference? The deal's a deal.
When you... This is the fifth time I've come to ask you this question.
And the fifth time I probably didn't answer you.
At least you got consistent.
If you're telling something to somebody and he doesn't believe you and you say, I swore to Hashem,
that's called a shvur shav. That's not what it's talking about over here. If somebody, we're going to see later, if somebody swears that now it's night, somebody says, I swear it's night now, yeah? Mm-hmm. That's called shvur shav. It's not shvur sheked. It's not a false oath. It's called a shvur in vain. Okay? And you're transgressing the Ten Commandments. They see Hashem, Hashem Elokecha Lashav. You didn't lie. It's a truth shvur, but it's obvious.
So you can't do that.
You're not allowed to do it. No, it's biblically forbidden. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Or, pasuk hey. B'hoye chiyasham l'achas me'ela. It will be if the person will sin any of these things, meaning either swore falsely with the money, or he'll become tummy and go into the Beis HaMikdash, or he'll make a vow to eat or not to eat, and he didn't. And by the way, the Gemara learns it's either in the past or the future. For instance, if a guy says, I didn't eat chicken, and he did eat chicken, that's this din. Or if a guy swears, I will eat chicken, and he doesn't, it's also this din. And it goes either I will eat or won't eat, or no matter what it is, it's... goes both ways. For the future, doesn't matter if it's the future or the past.
You have to do it as a vow.
Yeah, it has to be in the way of a vow.
How do you do like a vow for the past?
No, if a guy swears that I didn't do something, and he did.
And before that, he had a vow.
No. A guy yesterday ate chicken. Mm-hmm. Okay. And today he makes a shvuah that I didn't eat chicken.
Why are you making this such a
shvuah? Why?
But you're joking.
It's for nothing.
Not joking.
But
if I'm joking, does it count?
No, it has to go after the lev. But if a person meant... I'll give you an example. I'll give you a simple example. Kids over bar mitzvah, let's say. They went into the freezer and ate ice cream. And the mother says, who ate the ice cream? I swear I didn't eat it.
Yeah, for example.
There you go.
There you go.
It's a very common crime.
Or the husband swears, I did. I swear I didn't eat that nash.
That ice cream.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. That's called shvur sheken.
For husbands, it's a drumstick. Yeah,
yeah, drumstick, yeah. Okay, so it says like this.
If you just say, I will do something, is that
if you swear that you will and you don't, then it's shvur.
You just say, like, I will meet you at 5:30.
It's not a din of a shvuah, but it says, Meitzah sasecha tishmer, what comes out of your mouth you should keep.
That's why.
And therefore, it's always comfortably nader.
Yeah. And if it's a white lie, that's why you, there's a white lie to save someone.
Embarrassment.
Embarrassment or
shalom bias.
So you swear for the person not to do
it. It's so good and it's really loud.
Yeah.
Is it important
that's a mitzvah.
Okay.
That's when you swore you ate chicken.
You have to learn in Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Nun Vav. There's a whole big paragraph about when you could do a white lie. It's only for the past or the future, and all that. There's a very famous argument in the Gemara Ksubis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Everybody knows this Gemara because they played at all weddings. Keitzeh merakdin lefnei akala. How do you dance before a kala? What's the answer? Kala nova chasuda, a beautiful, righteous girl, right? So Beis Shammai, who is very straight, Beis Shammai said, that's what Beis Hillel holds. Keitzeh merakdin lefnei akala. Beis Shammai says, how do you, keitzeh merakdin lefnei akala? Beis Shammai emim, Kala kameis shehi. The way the Kala is, she's beautiful, you say beautiful. She's ugly, you say ugly. It's called the shot as, that's what Bishami says. So, Beis Hillel says, Kala norva chasuda, a beautiful bride. So, Bishami says to Beis Hillel, the word says, Bishami says to Beis Hillel, Midrashaka tirchok. If she's ugly, how could you say, she Kala nor, beautiful Kala? So, the Beis Hillel answered, because in the Chosin's eyes, she's beautiful. If not, he wouldn't have taken her. So when you say, Kala Norva Chasud, it's not a lie. For you, she might be ugly. But for him, obviously, she's not ugly. If not, he wouldn't have married her.
She can have a beautiful soul.
So beautiful Norva Chasuda is whatever it may be. But in his eyes, she's beautiful. And Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel says, after Recha Kamech, you know, you have to be nice to people.
How about if a parent does something wrong and the children protect the parent and lie to the other parent about, they say, oh, I did it. They didn't do it.
Shalom bias.
There are times, when I want to learn now. It's a very complicated din when a white lie, as it's called in English, a white lie when it's allowed, when it's not allowed. You're not allowed to lie. You're allowed to stretch the truth. No, there's a big difference between stretching the truth and lying.
You have to define lies. Lies of omission.
So in Shulchan Aruch, okay, let's get back here. So what do? You have to confess the sin that you did. Then in Pasuk Vav, it says, what else do you have to do? Behaviors Hashem El Hashem, you have to bring your carbon Hashem Bat Hashem. Al Chatosei for his Chatos, Asher Chata that he sinned. And here's a very interesting double expression of Chumash. He says, Behaviors Hashem El Hashem, Hashem. And then right away it says, Al Chatosei Asher Chata. Is it a Chatos or is it an Hashem? What is it? Well, Asham is sin and Chatos is sin. But why is the Torah switching it around? Okay, so the Gemara says like this. So the Medrash, the Sifra says, learns out from this Pasuk, that some of the laws of Asham, that the Torah is speaking about here, which are unclear, we learn out from Chatos. So now, why is the Torah calling this Korban Asham and Chatos? Because some of the dinam of Ashum we learn out from Chatos. So the Torah is telling us that one supplements the other. But he brings on, from Shamshon to Fulhish, brings on a very interesting thing. He says, he brings on a Ramban here in this parsha that says, what does the word Ashum come from? Ashum means sin, yeah? But the Ramban explains interestingly, the word Ashum comes from the word Shemama, which means desolation, desolate. Okay? It says like this. The sinner endangered his future existence by what he has done. Okay? Because a person swore false, whatever he does, he thought he was swearing truthfully. No matter what the case is, no matter what the case is, a sin causes desolation, it causes emptiness, not only for now, but for the future. In other words, a sin basically has permanent damage. Well, like it says at the beginning of Chumash, when Cain killed Hevel, so the process is, "Kol d'mei achicha tzarekim alai," d'mei is plural. So Rashi says, why is it plural bloods? You only killed one guy, because by killing Hevel, you killed his kids, and his kids, and his kids, and his kids, and all future generations. Right? So there is a concept of osha, meaning making the world shamein, which is an expression of desolate, empty, nothing there, because that's what happens when a person sins. So there's a chatos, which is, like we learned, lacking. And there's the asham, which is worse. And therefore, what we discussed at the beginning, the word chait primarily means for accidental sin. And asham is more for an intentional sin. Okay, but he brings down from the Gemara, someone who is totally unaware is regarded as lacking personhood with reference to laws of an oath. In other words, if someone swore falsely regarding event in the past, but he thought he was swearing truthfully, there's no carbon. Because he really didn't sin. He thought he was doing it right. He thought he was saying the right thing.
That's what I said.
What?
But he still enjoyed that?
If you swear falsely, you enjoy swearing falsely. If you know that you're swearing falsely.
But he didn't know.
Lack of knowledge is not lack of...
No, for instance, it says, what happens if a person swears not to eat bread, but he thought he swore to eat bread. Sometimes, you know, you say no, yes, forget the word sometimes with age. You forget what you're doing. So if a person swore, he swore not to eat bread, but he thought he swore to eat bread, and he eats bread. That's called a shvur betois. It's a mistake. Or, like Halacha says, the Gemara says, by Ndorim, you go after Deis B'nei Adam, what most people mean. Like, for example, what happens if a person, he wanted to make a shvua, he's not going to eat a plum. But he really meant an apricot. And by mistake, he said a plum. So the din is, it's not a shvua. Because he didn't swear what he really meant to say. It was a mistake.
So it's not a vow, or it's not a vow?
It's not a vow.
What?
No, right.
Did he have the wrong
cover? Apricot is not because he never said apricot or apricot. Plum is not because he made a mistake. What?
Let's say that this person says, I'm not going to eat this particular food. Is there a time limit or is for ongoing?
It depends what he says.
Let's say I'm not going to eat this food anymore.
Anymore means anymore. Until he dies. There's a whole in the Nedarim, in the Gemara in the Nedarim, it's brought down in Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. What happens? The guy says, "I'm not going to eat this food until Pesach." Does he mean when Pesach starts, when Pesach's over? The whole thing, the whole discussion in the Gemara with all the various halachas. Okay, let's weiter. So what does he do like this? Vehavius Hashem el Hashem. He brings a korban Hashem to Hashem Shechotas and Shechotah. What does he bring? The cave of female. Minatzein from the flock, kizba isidus izim, either a sheep or a goat, lechatos for sin offering. V'chiper all of akim chatosi, and the kohen will provide him atonement. What happens? But again, you see the process of the oshim. It doesn't say, so we learn it out from chatos. What happens? Imle sagia yadi deisa. What happens if he can't afford? He's poor. He can't afford this sheep. Then he has to bring birds. How many birds though? He has to bring shtei teirim, two turtle doves, or shnei bnei yena, two young pigeons. Not one. By the sheep, one's enough. By birds, the Torah says you need to bring two. No. No. The Torah says either two of this or two of this. If he takes them from Hefker, it's his. If he steals them, no good. No, it's...
They have to be yours.
That we learn all the way at the beginning of Vayikra. It says, Adam ki yakriv, mikam karban Hashem. So Rashi says, Lama nema Adam. Should say Ish. Adam is a very uncommon word in Chumash. So it says, to tell us that you can't bring from stolen, because just like Adam Rish didn't steal, because everything was his, the same thing, you're not allowed to bring a carbon from stolen goods. If you bring a carbon from stolen goods, it is not accepted carbon. Bechlal, in Shulchan Aruch, it says a din, mitzvah haba ba'aveda, ain't a mitzvah klal. It says a mitzvah that comes through a sin is not a mitzvah at all. If you rob a bank and give tzedakah, it's not a mitzvah at all. The Gemara says if you steal food, but it's very interesting, if you steal somebody's food, by the way, it's just common in schools, you know, you steal from everybody else's lunchbox. If you steal food, then you're not allowed to make a bracha on the food you steal. The Gemara says, Ein ze mevarech ele minaitz, like it says, Shenemer ubeitzea beirach nietz Hashem. The Gemara says, not only you're not doing a mitzvah, you're doing an aveda, you're telling God, hey, look at this, I stole, and I'm thanking you for what I stole.
What about what? You tasting?
Not partially or the whole amount?
The what? I didn't know what you said.
I mean, the money, I mean, whatever he is bringing, the stole is not good. Is it, let's say he bought something for $10, $5, he stole $5 he put from his money.
Taking Sadaka from Rishayim.
No, then whatever he stole is no good.
Yeah, but the Korban. He buys a $10 Korban.
And $5 he stole and $5 he didn't. It's not a Korban. You know, there's a very interesting machlekes in the Rishayim. The very interesting thing. So it's machlekes Rashi and Tesis, and the machlekes Rambam and Rosh. Very interesting argument in the Rishayim. When two people are a partner in something, does it mean half is yours and half is mine? Or does it mean every single part of it is both? So Samachol Yisrashi and Taisis and Rambam Mirosh. Okay? The very practical example is, me and you are neighbors, okay? And together we build a wall between our yards, right? Now the wall, let's say, is 6 feet wide. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, so half is yours, half is mine. Correct? Now what does it mean? Your half is yours and my half is mine? Or every part of it we're both partners in?
I'd say the second one.
Whereas you see a very halachic difference. If you want to make your wall higher on your half.
Or maybe from a different substance.
No, whatever you want to go. You built the wall already, partnership. You both gave $1,000 to build a wall. So now you have a wall. Okay? Now, we're partners in the wall. So one way of looking at it is, my half is mine, and your half is yours. And therefore, my half, I could do whatever I want. Right? Or, are we partners in every part of the wall? Okay? And therefore, you can't do on your half what you want to do, because it's my half too. And I could stop you. I can't do only what I want on my half of the wall because your partner you can stop me too. Okay? So by shutfim, there's a machlekes in Rishayim, if it's half and half or everything is 50-50. Everything is. By Yerusha, interesting, by inheritance, the din is, the Rishayim write, that Yerusha, if there's five kids inheriting, the din is each one of the kids inherit everything.
No partner.
It's not that they inherit a fifth each. By inheritance, each kid inherits everything. You can't get everything, so you divide it into five. But conceptually, every child inherits the whole thing. Now, you take $5 stolen, $5 legal. You buy a carbon. Now, every part of that carbon is half stolen, half kosher. So you can't bring a half a carbon. You know what you find is very interesting? It's very interesting halacha. A person, a goyish slave, is obligated in all the mitzvahs women are obligated in. Okay? But not a mitzvah that men are obligated in. Okay? Once he becomes free, he becomes a full-fledged male Jew. That's the loch of every Kanani. Now, the Gemara says, what happens if somebody's a chotzi eved v'chotzi ben chayrin? He's half slave and half free. Now, how can you be half slave, half free?
Two partners, one son.
Two partners own a slave, and one partner freed the slave. Okay? So now, the guy, this person, is half slave and half free. That's what he is. So the shayla, the whole argument, b'sham b'silul, the guy can't marry, get married. He can't marry a Jewish girl because he's half goy. He can't marry a goy because he's half Jew. Okay, so b'sil and b'sham, we both agree, eventually, that you have to free the slave. But now there's an interesting halacha. This guy who's half full Jew, women, by the way, halachically are not obligated to listen to shofar. It's a mitzvah connected to time. Right. Nowadays, they're obligated because they accept it upon themselves. But in biblically, women don't have to hear shofar. It's a mitzvah connected to time, right? Now, this guy, because he's half man, Jew, needs to hear shofar. Half of him doesn't. Okay? Halacha says he can't even blow shofar for himself. He can't even blow shofar for himself. Why? Because half of each blow, like a woman cannot blow shofar for a man. She's not obligated. She can't fulfill a man's obligation with shofar, right? A woman can't blow shofar for a man. Correct? So, every blowing that he blows is half free, half slave. So Shonar says, the Gemara says, he can't even blow for himself. Why? Because every blow that he blows is half not obligated. Therefore, he has to listen to shofar from another person. It's the only case that a guy can't hear shofar from himself. A woman can hear shofar from herself. A man can hear from himself. Yeah, even a kid, to fulfill his obligation as a kid, can also blow for himself. The only human being that can blow for himself is the guy who is half free and half slave. So the same with your case. Every cent that's in this thing is half stolen, half kosher, half not kosher. So it's not a kosher car. What?
I have a question. When you say there's two owners of a slave and one frees him and the other one doesn't, you could say that half the ownership is gone, but you can't say he's half a slave. He's a full slave still.
No, he's not.
Of course he is. He's still.
He's half free. The guy freed him.
He's still a slave by the other guy.
No, but the guy, this guy freed him.
Still a slave.
No, half of him.
Does he work or doesn't work?
So the Gemara says, so Beis Hillel says, no, Beis Hillel says one day he works for himself, one day he's free. So Beis Shammai says, you can't do that. You only settled the working process. But the Gemara says, who's he going to marry? He can't marry a shiksa because he's half Jewish. He can't marry a Jew because he's half goy. It says, and the Gemara says, le'leteo b'ra ala l'shavis yisara. The halach is you force the master that still owns him to free him.